On this episode of the iPhoneography Podcast, me and Greg talk about the limitations of the iPhone, whether they're a solid block limitation, something that can be worked around or worked with, and we go over our recent photos.
It's Monday, January 30th. Welcome to the iPhoneography Podcast. I'm Greg McMillan, and I'm joined by my good buddy, Dave Podner. How are you doing, Dave?
Not doing good, Greg. Doing good. Surprisingly warm for January. Surprisingly warm for January. Yeah. So never complain about that.
No, don't complain, because it's getting colder here. Like, it's getting down into the -5, -10 Celsius range, which is pretty cool. So I'm thinking that's probably in the maybe the teens to early low 20s for you guys. But, cold. And of course, today we got snow. It's starting to look like winter again. And I just can't help but wonder if it's not going to rain in a week and get rid of it all, just like it did the last two times. Mm-hmm. But This week we are going to talk about limitations of the iPhone camera. And, as more and more, and I see this in, on Twitter, like on social media and places like that, as more and more people who regularly shoot with a DSLR, and I've seen it on YouTube videos too, DSLR shooters are starting to pick up their phones and use them for not regular photos all the time, but they're starting to experiment with them and, see how they are. I think maybe what they've been hearing is that they're starting to get pretty good. So they want to try things out and see how they match up to a DSLR. And I'll be the first one to say they are not as good as a DSLR in a lot of cases. I think there are some cases where they're better. Picking up dynamic range, for one, because of the computational stuff that they do. But anyway, we're going to come across some of these points that we jotted down, and we'll kind of quickly debate on whether it's really a limitation, or if it is, maybe what we can do to work around that based on our experience as iPhone shooters for years. So
exactly. And one thing also I want to say is, it isn't that we don't like shooting with the iPhone. We both love shooting with the iPhone. We both love shooting mobily, but mm-hmm. we have to realize that nothing is perfect. No tool is perfect.
That's
and
right.
I also want to make sure if people are starting, they know the limitation of their tool.
Yes.
Like you said, there's ways to get around the limitations, and sometimes you have to accept the limitations, as much as that hurts, and as much as people are trying to sell you stuff to get around those limitations, mm-hmm. sometimes you can't get around the limitations, and you can use them to your creative advantage sometimes, and sometimes mm-hmm. you just have to say, okay, that's outside the reach of my tool. Mm-hmm. If you're someone who likes to ride their bicycle, that's a great tool for getting around. But there are times it doesn't work, i.e. it's snowing. Rain may be an issue. You're going to the grocery store more than more for a couple things. You have a big shopping. I'm going to get a frozen turkey. Well, generally, you're not going to put the 20-pound turkey on your back in a backpack and ride your bike home.
You could, if
that's all you have, but it's not the best tool for you.
Yeah.
Same thing with the iPhone camera.
Yep.
We think it's a great tool, but we have to know the limitations, and knowing the limitations, we can use as a springboard or knowing what we can do with it.
Yeah. And, when I sold all my DSLR equipment back in 2016, it's been that long. It was July of 2016 that I sold it all off and went all in iPhone. I knew there was going to be limitations to my photography going forward. And, I debated that for a little bit before I decided to sell the other stuff. But once I made the jump, I was all in with both feet, and it's been a really fun journey, learning experience, all that stuff. evolving my photography over the years with the evolution of the iPhone camera and all that stuff. It's just been I have no regrets at all of getting rid of that stuff and going all in iPhone. So Dave, without going into a rant, take a deep breath. Just briefly cover your first point.
It's Zoom.
Yes.
And not the software. Zoom. Not the software we're using talking to right now, but physical Zoom. There is a combination of physical limit, I mean literally physics limit on Zoom, and software, because we've seen Samsung do whatever tricks they do behind the scenes and Google do whatever trick, and I mean tricks not as in underhanded tricks.
Yeah,
software,
right.
Software manipulation, AI, machine learning that makes their Zoom better than the digital Zoom better than the iPhone digital Zoom.
Yeah.
Or at least crisper. I won't say better, crisper. And they do have better, they have longer cameras, so you do have more of a, but it's still, if you're coming from replaceable lenses or even a super zoom, like my last quote unquote real camera was a super zoom where it had a 30x optical on a point and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps. And it did. You can go up to 100x digital zoom. So, and the digital zoom was not horrible. It wasn't like stupendously great, but it was pretty good. So if you, I mean, there are times where, of course, we all hear the best zoom are your feet. You know, if you can get closer.
Yeah.
I will agree to a point. A, sometimes you can't. You know, sometimes not only
sometimes
can't
if you're on the other side of a river, be even a small river, like a creek, you get to the edge and that's as far as you're going to go. If you want to get something on the other side,
exactly,
that's it.
Yeah. Or if, let's say you do want to use a longer zoom lens to get the depth of field the way you want.
Yes.
You know, we hear tons of people say the best portrait shots with the iPhone are with the 3X, not the 1X.
Right.
Because of how the depth of field is. Well, you know, there are people, and I've seen people take with the 300 millimeter lenses, you know, the type you need support because they're so freaking heavy.
Mm-hmm.
They use those zoom and it really compresses the image together, where if you're taking a nighttime sky photo with the moon in the background, it'll magnify the moon because it's smooshing it there because of the focal length.
Yeah.
And you can't get that image, even if you could digitally zoom in, because you don't have the optical zoom, you still can't get that image.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I've had people, and I saw people say that has to be a composite image because the moon doesn't look that big. And he said, okay, I'll show you how I do it. It's because I'm using this, and he showed the lens. It's literally like your arm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But
because
we can't do that.
It just, and I'll just do this real quick. If you zoom in the moon that big on one of those types of lenses with a DSLR camera, and say you've got a building in the foreground that looks really small compared to the moon, well, that's because that building's a long ways away from you and you're zooming everything in. And it's just like a, almost like a trick photography thing, but it's just the nature of focal lengths and optics and things like that. So, so I've reached out to some friends in the local camera club in our private Facebook group that we have. And I threw this question out to them about limitations of shooting with a phone. And that was one of the things that just about everybody said was the lack of zoom or, you know, cause a lot of them like to shoot birds with their cameras, not guns. A lot of them like to take pictures of birds and things like that. And they're not going to be able to do it with a phone. Maybe with a Samsung Galaxy S22 Ultra with 100x zoom or whatever is in that thing, but not with an iPhone. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, Zoom is probably the number one limitation, I would think, And you know, you're that's you know, that it's a limitation that we're stuck with, at least for now. So
And I would say, well, like I said, I've never used a telephoto lens, attached lens for my iPhone. You have for, I don't think you use it now, but you have in the past. And there are limitations for that where the edging, you can get distortions on the edges of the image, some heavy lens distortion. And also that means you have to remember to carry the lens with you if you're going out.
Yeah. I had a bit of a discussion, or I was basically commenting on a question in. So there's another Facebook group that I joined recently, and it's called Explorers of Life. And it was started by a relatively famous Canon photographer, Rick Salmon. And this in this group, somebody asked about using the telephoto lens on the iPhone, like an add-on lens. So I took a fair bit of time to give a good explanation about how it started, you know, back in my experience anyway, when I went with Moment, and on my iPhone like 6S, I think was the first, it was the 6S was the first iPhone I had that I used those lenses on. And it worked great. It was really good. The image quality was really good. My next phone was the 8 Plus, which is the same time as the 10 came out and everything else. And the first iteration of the Moment lenses did not work very well because the optics changed over the two iterations of iPhone. It went from the 6S to the 7, and then from the 7 to the 8, 8 Plus, 10. And in those 2 years, the optics of the camera changed enough that it just totally ruined how those Moment lenses worked. The first thing I did was I put my wide lens on my 8 Plus, and I had vignetting in the corners to the point it was actually black. It wasn't just a slight vignette. It was actually black in the corners. And I sent Moment a picture of that, and I said, whoa, is this normal, or do I got a bad lens, or what's the deal? And they responded and said, yeah, this is an issue and we have to do a redesign of the lenses. So they redesigned the wide, the tele, and I'm not sure what else. But with their next version, the V2, in the 8 Plus, everything was good again. You know, it was sharp image quality, corner to corner. And you know, I was a happy camper. But then over the years, with each iPhone I got, I get one every 2 years or whatever, it kept getting worse and worse and worse, and kept getting, you know, blurrier and blurrier in the corners because the optics were changing in the iPhone. And they had, since that V2 lens came out, they have not redone their design. And it's the same I'm finding with, I've got a reflex telephoto lens, and I mean, it's only a year or two old, but it's the design from that lens is, I don't know how many years old. And, you know, the optics changed even from my 12 Pro Max to my 14 Pro Max. They changed to the point where it's worse again. So using a telephoto lens that made by one of these companies on a phone for photos, not that great. Let me back up. For a landscape photo, not that great. But for a portrait, really, really nice. David Addison's done videos with where he shows portraiture with these lenses, and they actually look really, really good. The difference there is because when you take a portrait of a person, you know, you're focusing on the person, and then everything else can be blurry, which is basically what you want. You don't want sharpness around, you know, the whole image. Like when I say the whole image, I mean corner to corner, end to end, all that stuff. The outside of the frame, can be a little blurry, and it's okay. So it's not that these lenses are useless. It's not that I would say don't buy one, but I would say that's a limitation of those lenses. If you want to get that extra reach, you know, continuing on our point about the zoom, getting that extra reach is it's possible with the little telephoto lens to get a little better reach. You could even put it on the telephoto camera, like the 3X camera of a pro iPhone. And I mean, I'm not sure if the math is exactly this way or not, but it's almost like a 210 millimeter lens. But I don't know if that's an accurate statement. But it does really bring things in close. But again, expect a little bit of blurriness around the outside of the frame. Now, video, on the other hand, is a lot better because you're only using a small part of the sensor to do video. It's not like you're using the whole sensor. So it's actually cropped, and video actually works pretty good, I think. So, you know, this whole zoom thing and the concept of using telephoto lenses, it has its good points and it has its bad points. So, you know, if you're thinking about getting one of these little lenses to use with your phone, you keep all that stuff in mind. You know, weigh out the pros and cons of how you're going to use it, what you want to use it for, and you know, expect a varying degree of results.
Yeah, agreed. So, no, I mean, honestly, I think, yeah, and you used very reputable add-on lens companies. You weren't using no-name knockoffs the design and the quality of the lens may be questionable. You know, Moment is a very good company. They have, you know, you look at them, they have excellent reputation for a reason, mm-hmm. and they still have issues. But also, I was looking when you were mentioning about the 6S, just to kind of refresh my memory, that mm-hmm. only had one lens.
Yes, that's right. One camera.
Yeah, it had the one camera, and computationally, it was basically, you take a picture, here's what it looks like, versus now, if you zoom in anything more than 1X, you know, I'm not even talking 3X, if you do a, you know, 1.8 zoom on the iPhone, it's going, or, you know, you're going to, oh, we're going to take some of here, we're going to use some of the 3X, we're going to meld it together computationally, we're going to shove it together. So if you want to use, now you got, you know, three on the pros, three lenses, one camera, three lenses pretty much. And so if you want to clip on the external, an external one, you probably can't use the built-in camera app.
That's because right.
It'll
That's
say,
a good point.
It'll say,
That's
oh, no, really no, there's point. Something there. I'm going to automatically switch you.
Yes.
So you're going to have to use a third party app,
I used to know what they called that. It's something fusion. And yeah, what it does is it uses the wide camera because of the better aperture, but then it uses mm-hmm. parts of the next level
pixel
up
by
telephoto
pixel.
Camera.
Yeah.
And usually the central area of that sensor. And it puts mm-hmm. it all together, and it's maddening.
It's all computational, yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the computational stuff, like I took a couple of pictures recently where, and like I've said that I use live photos just because I don't always change the frame on the live photo, but I like the ability to have it there. Yeah. There was a couple photos recently where it was just our dogs around Ruth's brother. And I did not like the automatic fixing it did. So mm-hmm. I just switched to another frame that wasn't the one it selected, and it got rid of all that automatic fixing. I could do my own little thing without having to like go into RAW. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, I think everyone mentioned Zoom, and I'm hoping Apple takes care of it in the 15. Hopefully it's more than just the 5X optical. Hopefully it's the 10, but it's probably going to be 5.
Well,
just knowing how Apple does not push physics that much, to be honest.
And, you know, we've said it before, they've been working on it probably for a few years already. And mm-hmm. in typical Apple fashion, they have to make it perfect, quote unquote, perfect before they release it. So, you know, again, we'll see what happens. So something else one of my friends mentioned was that they first thing she said was, you know, the reach, the zoom. And then she followed it up with, I would miss the polarizer too. Well, that's not a limitation because you can use a polarizer on the iPhone. All you need to do is have a way of fastening the filter to the phone. And you could, I have one from Reflex, and I don't have the polarizer, but I have ND filters, but I have it's just clips over the cameras and it fits perfectly over this big camera array on the 14 Pro Max, and it works great. The filter size is 62 millimeters, and I could get a polarizer if I want. I might even have, I have a package of cheap filters that I bought on Amazon one time because I wanted to try them, and one of them I think is a polarizer, so I'm gonna have to pull it out and try it and see. But I mean, they're all 62 millimeters, so they'll fit that thing. And there you go. Bob's your uncle. You got your polarizer. So that, to me, like, filters is not a limitation with the iPhone. And to prove that even more, go to Shane Mostyn's channel and check out his latest video where he did a review on this set of filters that just snap on with a magnet. It's really slick. It's from a company called Freewell, and the case, you get a phone case, and on the case around the camera array, there's a magnet, and the filters just click on, and it's so slick. I'll put a link in the show notes to that video where you can have a look at it. And I mean, so basically bottom line is filters are not, a limitation with the iPhone. So you have a point.
Before you move on, I just did a quick search for that, and I'm just seeing the image here of one. It's from Sandmark.
Oh yeah,
and they have a polarizing filter. And in the text before I zoomed in on it, when they said it fit over all three, I didn't know exactly what they meant, but now I do. And this thing is giant.
Yeah, yeah.
This thing is a legitimate giant lens that it doesn't cover each filter into it. It's just like a giant, like putting oversized glasses over a camera.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if it switches or not. You got it all.
That's right. And that's what my Reflex stuff does. It covers all three cameras. And I think I can even do a shot with the ultra wide without getting cutting into it. Yeah. So yeah, they work great. They do. You put down a point about low light. So that's an interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, the iPhone does a good job with low light, you know, but it's of course computational.
Yeah.
That,
AKA, you know, you night need mode.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And every camera, it seems like every iteration, they improve the light's gathering, so you can get darker and still use a regular shot versus kicking into night mode.
Yeah.
You know, if you compare your old 12 to your new 14, and you were out at the same time and it was starting to get dark or it was dark, your 12 may go into night mode, your 14 may not have to.
That's right.
So that's an improvement, especially, but you still got to have the issue of, it's dark and it still takes minimum 3 seconds for the shot. And if you want, you know, most of the time you try to do maybe a 10 second shot to get a little more light. And it does a good job computationally, but you have to stay there for 3 to 10 seconds, or if you want to use a tripod or prop up your camera, 30 seconds. And that means any movement, any jiggle has issues. If you're trying to get anything that's moving in the dark, forget it. You can't do it.
Yeah, I tried that with our dog. Yeah. Don't work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I have used, like, there were times the dog started to go crazy and started to bark like mad. And, you know, I couldn't see a thing. So, and I go in the backyard, I see the hill, I see nothing because our spotlight doesn't really reach much beyond the fence. And so I have used my phone as kind of night vision goggles to see exactly what they're seeing.
That's interesting.
And yeah, and it's not great. Because if you're trying, you know, it's one thing to say this does great with
not to interrupt, but I'm sorry. Just love what's going on here.
Yeah.
Folks, well, if only you could see the video. Dave's cat has been walking back and forth in front of his camera for about the last 30 seconds.
Okay. There we go. Okay. I figured she wanted on my shoulder.
Yeah.
And I figured I help her up my shoulder versus her jumping on me or starting to claw me.
Yeah. So. So, yeah, but anyway, back
this,
to your point.
I get this on the work at the call center. I get this.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. But yeah. She'll come up during my work. She'll come up here, jump on my shoulder while I'm on the phone with the customer, and they don't know.
That's cool. So yeah, you're saying about using it like kind of like night vision.
Right. Right. Because like I said, I see the dogs barking and I want to see what they're barking at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it a skunk? Is it another cat? Is it whatever? And I've used it and I see deer in the backyard. But night mode works great for up close shots. Like you're trying to take a picture of a person within, let's say, 8 feet or so. And they'll come out relatively crisp and clear. It works great for you want to take a shot of a city and you have the stars and it'll work good there. Mm-hmm. But that middle distance, 10 feet to, you know, so much, it gets a little blurry there.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do
all
great.
That
so I like
stuff that it's doing. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Which, again, it's a limitation. It's physics. There's a physics limitation. Your lens is the 14 lenses are giant compared to other iPhone lenses, but compared to, you know, I was going to say real camera, but compared to a dedicated camera's lens, traditional or dedicated camera, it's small. The light gathering is not what it needs to be for true, you know, taking night shots. That's why the computational does its thing. So I can see it's deer, but it's kind of blurry deer. That's a limitation. You know, if you want to take a shot of, let's say, you know, of the night sky, you can do that with an iPhone pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, night clouds, not so much because of the movement of the clouds. Literally just a little bit of movement in the clouds for 10 seconds is enough to throw you off a little bit.
Yeah.
Stars, you know, the relative movement so slow that it's not going to affect it that much.
Right.
Planes and satellites will be streaks.
Yeah.
But it's just because, again, it's a physics limitation. I think Apple's going to make it better and better each time. They're going to try to make the lenses bigger and bigger, better light improvement, and better computation as they have their engineers and start working on stuff. But it's a limitation of what we have to deal with. And the other problem with low light, and I'll kind of meld this into the next one, is low light but high contrast.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You're taking a picture at night with a street light. Well, that street light's going to mess up everything.
Yeah.
You know, it'll see this giant street light and it'll go, oh, that's a really bright light. So we can't do this. We can't do this. We can't do this. Again, it's a physical limitation of what they're dealing with. It's a computational, you know, there's not there. I think there may be a way they could say, okay, we're going to take this. We're going to expose this at this much, this at this much. Put other images together and meld it, you know, kind of, and that may be coming down the road, but it just can't do it right now. Especially
The iPhone kind of does that though, like with its pixel by pixel forget what the word is that they called it, but it, I mean, it analyzes the scene and I mean, super mm-hmm. high quality or high contrast. Yeah. It's not going to nail it. Like I was looking at pictures tonight, Dave, I had one on my screen and I was going to use it for one of my recent photos, but it was too high contrast. There was a street light in the view mm-hmm. and then there was some real dark areas and I was trying to, you know, balance it out and it just wasn't working. So I didn't bother using it, but in other cases where you've got high contrast, maybe not as high as that, but you know, you've got say a cloudy day where you've got, I mean, the one image that comes to my mind that I've taken is these cows in a field and it was a cloudy day and the clouds had some texture to them. Now, if I had to use a traditional camera to take that shot, without say like a gradual neutral density filter, I would have to either expose for the ground or expose for the clouds. I would not get both. But the iPhone does that flawlessly.
Right.
With the dynamic range that it's able mm-hmm. to capture. So, you know, in some high contrast cases, the iPhone does, you know, it does a good job. It's not as limited as, say, a traditional camera is in that case. Right. But, you know, like you say, though, if it's a real high contrast situation where, you know, you've got a real bright, bright light and some darker areas, yeah, it's you know, it kind of gets beat.
Right. And it's, and like I said, in computation, it's going to get better over time. The chips are only going to get more and more powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and with Apple Silicon having a similar team, I don't know internally if they're shared, but the fact that the M1, M2 chips for the Mac mm-hmm. are related to the A chips for the phone with similar architecture.
Mm-hmm.
That means improvement in ones will push improvement in the other. And it's just like they're putting, instead of having to put funding in this area and funding this area, it's funding fundamental area that spins off. So it's a little more efficient for them to get improvements than, you know, I'm not saying the Snapdragon processor's bad that comes out or the Intel chips or the AMD chips, but the fact that Apple can focus multiple points of research on one architecture and then spin that off, mm-hmm. I think that'll create quicker improvements.
Yeah.
And same thing with the fab structure.
Yeah. So one of your other, your last point you made was quick action. Like you've got moon photography, but that's basically, in with the zoom thing.
That's a combination of, I would say that's a combination of zoom and contrast.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's zoom and contrast. The fact that I can still, if I was using, I'll make sure I'm saying the app here. When I was using Reflex, I could use their digital zoom not at night because the contrast is way too much, mm-hmm. but during the day and get moon shots that are acceptable. Not good, not great, acceptable. They look that you know, especially if it was like a crescent moon, not a full moon, you mm-hmm. could have some art, but you have to zoom in so close that to look at the detail on the moon, all you're seeing is moon. You don't see moon through trees.
Right. Yeah.
There were a couple shots that recently, like during the day at work, I walk out, you have moon through the trees, you know, there's no leaves obviously, and I just love the desolate shot of the empty branches with the moon between them. I just because of the zoom and the contrast with, you know, everything going on, I just couldn't get the shot I wanted.
Right.
And that may be, again, that's as we said, that may be a great shot. The iPhone may not be able to do it right now. Three, 4 years?
Yeah, who knows?
But so the last one, like I said, quick action. The live photos help somewhat with quick action.
So when you say quick action, you mean quick quick action, like an action shot, right?
Right. Something. Yeah. Action shot, something moving around, sports, theater, a band on stage, or mm-hmm. someone doing a dance routine, or animals running around like crazy, or kids running around like crazy.
Yeah.
Or like I said, it's still, now admittedly, when you see professional photos, those cameras probably cost more than my car.
Yeah, really.
Like you see the people on the sidelines of the NFL games where they have literally a tripod to hold up their Zoom lens.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, 600 millimeter beast.
Exactly. You know, you need an assistant to help you carry it, or right, you get a strain back. But yeah, it's still a limitation of, if you want to get some, you can still get good shots. Don't get me wrong. You can still get them. They're harder to get. And you have to take, you may have to take multiple shots, either using the live photos to say, oh, I don't want that one, I want that one, just not mm-hmm. hitting it quite right.
Yeah.
Or you may have to use burst mode,
mm-hmm.
which if you use burst mode, you don't get a live photo out of it.
Right.
So you only get that one. So there's workarounds, but it's still a limitation to get that like shot of, let's say, someone running and they're beautifully captured as a still frame, and then the rest is blurred in the background.
Yeah.
You know, you still have that limitation where it's something you have to keep in mind if you're taking the photos.
Yeah. And to go along with that, if you want to freeze the action, you do really want to have as much light as you can. Like if you're, like you say, at a concert, and say, even if you are up near the front of the stage, you got really good seats and you want to get, you know, if you got a real active band member, or like a guitar player that's jumping around, you want to make sure it's nice and bright, or you will get a blurry photo. I've been there, I've done that. And, you know, it just takes, because these sensors are so small, you know, going back to how much light's getting to the sensor, they need a lot of light to get a real, real sharp photo with a fast shutter speed. And in certain situations, you know, that is a limitation. So, you know, something else to keep in mind. So, you know, yeah, like action shots, you know, lots of light. The final point we'll make is workflow issues. One of my friends said that she's starting to use her phone more, but she finds it a little cumbersome to incorporate that into her desktop workflow that she is so used to doing with her bigger cameras. And she uses Lightroom, and she's tried Lightroom Mobile, and it's just not ideal for her to use that. So, you know, it is a little bit of a limitation, but it doesn't have to be, because there's different ways you can get the images from your phone onto your desktop. If you have a Mac, it is very easy. There's a Mac app called Image Capture, where you can just plug your phone into your Mac, open up Image Capture, you see your phone there, and then all of a sudden there's all your pictures, and you just check the ones you want to transfer, and they'll transfer onto your Mac. I think you can actually even choose the location where they go. And Bob's your uncle. You've got your pictures from your iPhone to your Mac. Another way to do it on the Mac is to AirDrop. Now, there's a limit of something like 500 images or something that you can do at once or something like that. I've done a couple of hundred at once. And yes, it takes a few minutes, but it's a seamless transfer from my iPhone to my Mac. I would suggest using Image Capture. It's a lot quicker, I think, and it'll be even faster once the USB-C comes to the iPhone. But with the Lightning port, it's you know, it's not bad. If you're only doing, you know, a dozen or so images, it doesn't take that much time at all. So you can very easily get your images over to your computer. Now with a PC, it's been so long since I've had a Windows computer that I'm not 100% sure what the most ideal method is, I know there's apps that you can put on your Windows computer that would help you do that. Otherwise, you know, you could do something like Google Photos, and like Dave, you use that. So you back it up in Google Photos on your phone, go to Google Photos on your Windows PC, bang, there they are, download them. You got them. So there's easy workarounds for any workflow limitations, as you know, if you're using your desktop computer to do this kind of thing. So now, I don't use Google Photos, but you do. So, you know,
right. The only limitation with Google Photos is the same. It's less of a limitation than you get with the iPhone, is that, or I should say, iCloud, is you will run out of space. And I find, because of work I'm doing for someone else, that my videos tend to take up a lot of space, obviously. And it takes up my Google space, and I've got warning saying you've almost used your 2 terabyte storage or something like that. And I'm like, oh, it's all those videos, which I deleted from my iPhone, but it doesn't delete from, which is an advantage, by the way.
Yeah.
If you want to free up your phone storage, you can delete it on your phone. Your Google Drive keeps it there, but it can be an issue if you're, and I had to actually start paying for my Google Drive because I was running out of space.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, but it's just I've been paying for my iPhone drive too.
Well, you know what? There's really, really, really good online backups that have great iPhone apps. One is Mailio, and the other one I can think of is SmugMug. And it's unlimited backups, and you don't have to keep your images on your phone. So once they're backed up to these services in the app, you can delete them out of your phone. And you've always got, you can access them from your computer. You know, they're not free, but you know, any kind of good, reputable backup system is never free. If it is, they're getting something out of you that you don't want to give them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's always a way to work around the issue of a workflow. You know, I just don't see that as that much of a limitation, because there's, you know, so many ways to do that. Now, myself, I use iCloud. I have 2 terabytes of it because I share it with my family. And I got to tell you, for all the pictures and stuff that I take, I don't think it's even half full yet. My wife's on it, my son's on it, my daughter-in-law's on it. They don't take nearly as many photos as I do, but now with my grandson around, you know, my daughter-in-law
is shooting obviously
a lot of photos and videos, and you know, I'm sure she's putting them on there. If she's not, I'll better get talking to her and make sure she is, because you know, she doesn't want to lose that stuff. But you know, so there's always a workaround for the workflow. And I don't see that as a limitation, even if it has to cost you a little bit, it's worth it, you know, because if you're serious about your photography, which I know a lot of these people are, and you know, hey, what's a few bucks? Like, some people are paying for Lightroom and Photoshop and all that stuff, so why not pay for a good backup that could be part of your workflow?
Yeah. Well, I'll say this, that one thing that I think Apple needs to give us more free storage. The amount of storage they gave you for free, it's not enough. I mean, I have no problem, you know, saying here's a base storage and here's the more expensive. And like, I'm on the 2 terabyte plan and I use around half a terabyte with the backups and the photos and the videos and everything else.
Yeah.
But the base plan, what, 10 megabytes?
Is it only 10 now? 5 gigabytes. 5 gigabytes for free.
5 gigs. Okay. It should be 10.
5 gigs is enough to hold your apps.
No. And now you figure, the new 14 Pros, they have 48 megapixel. You can take 48 megapixel photos. You need to have, and you get sent and ProRes and, you know, all that. They need to up it up. They need, and it's on them because they're, I hate to say, they're pushing the camera on the phone, which marketing, I have no problem with them doing that.
Yeah.
They're pushing the video, which marketing, I hate, it makes sense. It's better. You want to get one, the, you know, it's really hard to say this phone is 13% faster than your last phone for doing computation. Well, that's great, but for most people, they're not doing anything to really crunch, but they can look at the difference in photos.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying the photos aren't better. They are. And it's the easiest thing to let people know the difference between the two.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good thing that's needed. But if you're doing that, you're going to increase storage need. You are making stupid amount of profit. Apple's making profit that a few years ago only oil companies made.
Yeah.
And now, of course, they're making more than oil companies.
They're making the most more profitable profit than some countries are with gross domestic product.
Yeah, exactly. So you could.
That's crazy.
We've noticed how many people take photos with their iPhones and videos, and that makes us so happy. And we want to make sure you take more, and it's safe because we make the safest, most secure storage. Therefore, we're now doubling or quadrupling the amount of storage.
I think
you get.
They can give away 25 gig easy.
Yeah,
I really do.
At no cost.
Yeah,
at no cost. You know.
It's like your internet company flicking a switch and giving you an extra 50 megabytes per second download speeds. If it's that easy, why don't you just do it without charging me an arm and leg?
Yeah.
But anyway.
I mean, I understand, you know, financially there's things going on, but like you said, they could do it and just flick the switch and all of a sudden it's like, you know, all of a sudden, and it makes it look better. And it makes, I think everyone has the same also issue with the, like the base storage, you know, people off at 512, you know, for a while they're starting people off at 64 or 128. And that's no,
I can remember when it was 8.
Yeah.
You know,
well, yeah. I remember when it was when it was 4 to 8 with the original, but yeah. So, but you know, they could, that's my only problem with iCloud is not necessarily, it's like, you're kind of nickel and diming people. It's not a good look. I understand that's where you're making your money from and you want the recurring money. Subscriptions are always better than a one-time purchase. I understand that financially. Just loosen it a little bit because your requirements for these photos are getting significantly higher. So you're still going to have, you know, it's like, okay, so if you now want 10 terabytes of storage, you can now get that for the price that we used to charge you for 5. People will be like, great, I'm going to bump myself up.
Yeah,
you know, there'll be people who are still paying for it. So, yeah.
So, you know, workflow issues, I would say predominantly a non-issue. There's always a way around it.
Well,
so
yeah, there's ways around it, and more people are editing on their phone anyway, or their iPad.
Yeah,
you're doing it from your iPhone to your iPad and back.
But like I said at the start, though, you know, there's a lot of traditional DSLR users that are starting to use their iPhones and they're starting to see these limitations. And I just, you know, actually all this was your idea, Dave. You suggested the limitations thing. So, but I thought, let's debunk some of this stuff and let's prove that, you know, yes, there are some limitations, but then again, some of them aren't so bad.
Exactly.
I think we've done a pretty good job of doing that.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so our recent photos. We'll mix it up again this week, and I'll do one, and you'll do one, and we'll bounce back and forth. How's that?
Sounds good.
Alrighty. So, I didn't have a great, productive photographic couple of weeks since the last show, but I did manage to get a few. And this first one here is a little small, very small waterfall. It's only maybe 5 feet, maybe about 5 feet high, from top to bottom.
Okay.
And I wasn't even expecting, so here's the deal. We took the dog to get her, we call it spa day, to get groomed. And we picked her up. And on the way home, we thought, okay, we'll stop at this location. It's the mill dam in town. So behind where this picture was taken is this big dam that the river gets, it's a really big river. And then there's the dam, and then it continues on. This little part here is a little offshoot from the main river, and then it just flows back into the river again on the bottom side of the dam. I really don't know what the purpose of this part of it is, but I love taking pictures of it because of all the rocks and everything else. And of course, we had a bit of snow, cold temperatures. It wasn't a lot of snow on the ground really, but this ice stuff here is a result of the water splashing around and freezing up. And so when I say I wasn't really planning on this shot, I had no idea I was going to stop here, or I would have taken my tripod. But luckily in the car, I keep just a little wee tripod with little legs on, maybe 6 inches, and a little phone clamp. And I just keep that in the door of the car for situations like this, or for times like this. I was able to grab it, go down to this location here, and just put it right down on the ground, right on this cement part, and right by the edge, so I didn't pick up the cement on in the angle of the camera there. And I set up with re-expose for 4 seconds, and it was overexposed a little too much, but I was able to get that stuff back because it was with re-expose, it was in RAW. And I just went into darkroom and dialed this way and that way with all the settings and everything else. Basically just gave it a boosted the color a bit, sharpened it up a little bit. And actually I did this on the desktop version of darkroom, which really works identical to the iPhone and iPad version. It's just that with my old eyes, it's a lot easier to see on the desktop. And what I really like about darkroom is the masking. Like I subscribe to it. It's like $25 a year. And I do that because I use it. I use it a lot, and I don't mind paying that. And in the masking, there's a luminance mask that you can apply, and you can adjust for how bright, like the brightness range of the parts of the image that you would like to work on. So what I did with this one, and I keep forgetting to do this when we start this, Dave, folks, look on your phone screen if you've got the podcast app going, or go to the website and you can see the image there. But what I did with this one is I selected a range of, I tried the luminance first and it didn't do what I wanted to do. So you know what I did? There's another mask called the depth mask. And so what I did was I chose the depth area. And I mean, this is not a depth image. It doesn't have the depth information that a portrait mode image does. But the depth mask selected the rocks down the right side, that big rock in the lower right, down into the water across the little creek, and then up the rocks on the left side. But it did not select the rocks right in the middle. There's three rocks in the middle of the creek there, and that's what I was focusing on. And the rock on the lower right, the great big rock, was just a little softer than the other ones. So I was able to select that area with the depth mask and sharpen them without affecting the sharpness of the rest of the image. And it worked so slick. It really sharpened them up real nice. It's almost like focus stacking the way it worked. And I thought, that is so cool. And otherwise, like, this is a 4 second long exposure sequence. And as far as shooting it goes, I should have brought the exposure down a bit, but I was like, it was way down on the ground and I wasn't going to lay on the ground to try to fool around with it. But so I ended up just taking it as it was. I did a few shots with reflex afterwards that does a little, it's a little more forgiving. But with this one here, with re-expose, it just, you know, just the way it exposed shot, it was a little overexposed, but I thought I had a pretty good feeling I can get that back in post. And it worked out great. So I just love the way these rocks sharpened up nicely without any, you know, they don't look over sharpened to me. And it just worked. I wish I'd had my ND filter, but like I say, I wasn't expecting to go shoot this. So that's my first one. So your first one is a really cool one that we were talking about this before the show. And we thought, yeah, this could make a good cover for a mystery novel or something.
Mm-hmm. So this was actually a shot I did on a run over the weekend. It's a part, kind of, it's a road, it's kind of a back road attaching the two local boroughs, both for Verona and Oakmont. So it's, you have the main drag that connects them, and this is kind of roundabout around some factories. And right. I just came around to it, and I added a lot of filters, made it black and white, put some grain on it, put a border on it. What caught my eye when I was looking at it was you have the basically two houses on the street, and like a, it's even hard to tell in the original image. Is that a separate house in the back, or is that kind of attached to one of the houses in the front that was like a barn area or something like that? Just the way I think that's a separate house in the back, but you have the three houses in front of you. Mm-hmm. It was cold enough that one had smoke coming out of the chimney.
Yeah.
And it just made it look like an old timey, you're out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and you just happen upon these houses here.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one good thing is the cars are mostly hidden.
Oh, yeah.
Because all you need to ruin an image is to have an ultra modern or a car that you could tell, oh, that's obviously a car from 2023 or, you know, 2020 or something like that.
Yeah.
So they're hidden enough. You can tell it's a car, but you can't tell anything about the car.
I see the car on the far left, but I didn't even notice the truck and the beside it until after you said that, mm-hmm. that there was a car in there. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So it when I was looking at it, kind of screamed old image to me. So that's why I kind of did the whole black and white, and this was zoomed in a good amount. So this is a 3x zoom.
Oh, wow.
Mainly all I did the zoom all instead of getting closer, because I wanted, as we talked about with the zoom part, having the longer zoom gives you a different depth of field and a different way everything focuses in.
Yeah, compresses.
So the image, exactly. So, and I wanted I didn't want the houses close enough where I would have problems with it being, you know, the vertical being affected by being close enough to it. Mm-hmm. So of course you're far enough away, you don't have to worry about the image problem that way. Now, admittedly, and I don't know if it'd be able to do this. The only thing I may have wanted to take out that's in here is not necessarily the stop sign. I don't mind that. The mm-hmm. arrow that tells you that there's a sharp curve.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe the Jersey barriers down below. Because obviously you can tell that the way the road goes here, kind of, yeah, that, and this is not a, it's not, and as Ruth kind of said, why did you run back there? It's not traveled heavily, so it's safe-ish to run on. Mm-hmm. But you can imagine at night, where it's kind of dark. Not a lot going on. And you may not notice that there's a corner there and all of a sudden you end up in someone's front hill.
Yeah, really.
So that's why the Jersey barriers.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, luckily they meld. They don't stand out. They don't stand out.
No, too much. I didn't. Like I said, I didn't even see them until you mentioned them. There's probably, I don't know what else.
They probably should. Picture. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the grainy. And I did this in Snapseed.
Yeah.
So I did all the editing in Snapseed in this using the grunge filter, using the vintage filter. And I did put it into the built-in photoing app into the Noir filter.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, as really a final works edit. Well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I posted, one similar to this that was more, I did a little additional editing where it kind of had a greenish hue to it and was a little softer. And someone said it looked like a cover for a mystery novel.
Yeah. Well, even, you know, kind of
the house on the bend. That, yeah. 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 The house on the bend or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So I haven't been to Pittsburgh or surrounding areas, but I've been to New England, Boston, up into New Hampshire and that. And a lot, if not probably 99% of the houses I saw had siding on them. Like vinyl clad or wooden siding or some sort of siding. Very, very seldom did I see a brick house. And that's what this reminds me of is like a mystery, you know, even maybe even a horror story up in New England. And so is this style of home very common for your area?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot. You don't get a lot of brick houses.
Okay.
Because the brick houses, you figure brick was expensive.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a decent amount of brick houses. The most common form of house, I don't know what the unofficial name for it is, the Pittsburgh Four Square. Basically, it's a square out. A lot of the houses are just squares, like 30 by 30 square. And imagine you're looking down from the top and you cut the floor and the floor plan, the four parts with a porch on front.
Oh, okay.
And then you have an upstairs to it. So a lot of the houses are like that around here. Our house is brick, but our house was also built in the 60s when the suburban boom started.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the weird thing is the house across from our backyard, which is on the main road, was built in the 1920s.
Oh, wow.
And it is a sided house, but the house I used to live in, that also had siding, but originally when it was built in 1920, it was wooden clap siding because again, you know, a middle class house, you know, it was, you know, you had the plaster on the inside, you had the, you know, it was well built. But it was affordable, and brick was a lot more expensive. So you had the siding, and then later on they put what was called insul brick over top, which is it looked like brick from a distance, but you can tell it was just sheets of whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the '80s, my gram had it sided with vinyl siding.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But yeah, a lot of the houses have vinyl siding because, or you know, they it's vinyl over wood. So they still have the wood siding, the wood clapping on it, but they put the vinyl over top in the 50s and 60s because it was easier to take care of. You didn't have to worry about rotting or painting it.
You know, a modern upgrade at the time, too.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, this image is really cool. I love the grunge effect. I haven't played with that for quite a long time. Like I used to use it a lot with Snapseed when I got my first iPhone. And I really like what it can do to an image, and it really makes this look like a scene out of a Stephen King story or something. So it's really cool. My second one is kind of, you know, it could kind of pass for that sort of mood as well, I think, because where I went out to get my haircut, the property is, it has this path, this trail going off into the woods. And on this particular day, it was kind of foggy. I would have liked to have seen it with a thicker fog, but there is a bit of fog off into the woods there. And I kind of titled this, "Would You Go Out to the Woods Today?" And, you know, I gave it a black and white treatment in, it was in dark room. I chose one of the cinematic filters, I think it is. And then just basically played around with the contrast a little bit. So as far as editing goes, that was it. You know, maybe the clarity slider or something, but I really like the way that the path just kind of goes off and bends to the left into the forest, and you really can't even see where it goes after that. So it makes you wonder what's out there. And there's a little bit of snow on the ground, and you know, it just gives you that sense of coldness, maybe. But I just thought, you know, I thought it was kind of a neat thing. Of course, compositionally, I put the path going from the center of the bottom of the frame off to the right a bit, and then it curves into the image into the left. Mm-hmm. So, but that's basically all I thought about with that is you know, would you go out to the woods today?
It definitely, but you look at the image, you want to put on more clothes.
Yeah.
It does scream to you, it's cold.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. You could call it baby, it's cold outside.
Mm-hmm. But no, yeah. Especially being stick season and only the path being mostly clear. And then kind of, like you said, going off where you can't see it. So it definitely, it depends on your mindset, whether you can think of it as maybe a thriller type thing,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
or like a serenity going off into the crisp winter, you know, to get away from everything.
Yeah, really. Yeah, but it's a cool spot where she lives out there, mm-hmm. Where I get my hair cut. And there's all kinds of photo ops out there on her property, but I just haven't been able to explore them or anything. But yeah, so your next one, it kind of takes us back to what we were talking about earlier with the limitations part of it all.
Okay, now which one are you selecting as the next one?
With, I believe that's Leo.
Oh, okay, the cat's one. Okay. Yeah, so this was taken, let me actually see when it was taken. It was taken, I think it was taken in the morning, but let me check. And of course, this is one advantage that we have all, this is 7 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So this was early in the morning, and the birds were going crazy.
Oh.
That's okay. Why Leo, and if you notice in the cat bed, there's Rosie. There.
Okay, yeah.
So you can see her tail more than anything else. So she's looking out the window. Leo's looking out the window. And it's 7 in the morning. So our back patio faces east. So it's light. It's light outside. But it's still dark enough on the inside. And I did do some editing to darken the inside a little bit to give it a little more mood this way.
Oh, yeah.
And it, just the way where both of them are just kind of looking out, looking at the birds, just wondering what's going on. It's like, okay, what's going on out there? And they're just kind of peeking their heads as they're looking out. And I didn't do this on purpose, but there's a little bit of a blue tinge to where the light is. But like you said, there wasn't really that heavy of a blue tinge outside. Some of that was just my editing. Okay. And I made it a little bit more golden on the inside, just the way that the sliders worked on it. Because you can look at the top of the drape. You can see the drape on the right looks more like it's supposed to. And on the left, you got some blueness there where it shouldn't be blue.
Yeah.
Again, like you said, limitation in the system. This is also, you know, early-ish in the morning, right after sunrise. You can see the not a lot of heavy, most of the light's probably coming from the light on the back patio that we have just outside to the right of the door.
We have a
spotlight out there, so you're getting more light from there than you are the sun yet. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of looking out as the birds first come out in the day.
Now, were the cats
they weren't chattering.
Or whatever it is?
No, they weren't chattering. They were just kind of kind of just looking out.
Okay.
I think if the birds were maybe closer, they probably would have started to do. I've heard more Rosie than Leo.
Oh,
do
yeah.
You know, and they're both getting impatient because it's kind of like, okay, windows are shut. Why are the windows shut? We want the window open. And I'm telling them, it's too cold.
Yeah.
The furnace is on, therefore the windows will be shut.
Yeah. No, I about this image,
mm-hmm.
I normally, and you'll probably agree with me, normally you wouldn't want to see that much smoothing in everything, but I like it here. You know, like that over, remember that face gate or whatever, where
the people's
skin looked unnaturally smooth.
Unnatural smooth, yeah.
Yeah. This looks unnaturally smooth, but I like it because it gives it just an artistic look. And, you know, you could even see it in the floor. I'm sure your floor has got more texture than that to it.
Yeah.
Being like ceramic tile. It's not a smooth floor. Mm-hmm. But it just looks really pleasing to the eye. Even that, it looks like a wooden box over, is that the fridge in the corner there?
No, that's actually a storage cabinet. That's
like a storage cabinet,
and that's a chopping board. Yeah, it's a pantry.
Okay,
a chopping board. It's a wooden chopping board. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it has this just like a painterly effect, but it's so smooth looking. Now, is that a result of any particular thing you did in editing,
or
is
that I want to say that I used. Let me see what I'm trying to remember what I did. This, it's well, unfortunately, a lot of times it's one of those things of you do so much work on things that you forget all the individual steps you did.
Yeah,
I want to say I probably let me see if I did this in Lightroom Mobile, and if I did, I'm guessing. See if it's, hold on. Yeah, I did. Okay. So what I did is under the effects, I did some work and got rid of like the highlights down, and I took the clarity down on that. And I did some work in the Photos app too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Decreasing with some, the clarity.
Getting rid of the sharpness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I really like the effect of that. And normally I would say I'm not a fan of that effect, but in this case, in this image, I think it just really looks cool. It really looks good.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, go ahead, Greg.
Well, I was just saying you've done a nice job of warming up the outside and cooling down the outside to give it that you know, warm, fuzzy feeling inside and, you know, cold, wintry look outside. You know, amazing choice of editing.
Oh, thank you. And honestly, when I first took it, I almost got a 1970s feel to it.
Yeah.
In terms of, you think back from film from the 70s, mm-hmm. had a certain look because of limitation of most cameras used at the time and of the film emulsion used. It had a look to it.
Yeah.
That's, you know, one of the reasons why you look at people's baby pictures and even if they aren't in black and white, you can say, oh, that's obviously an older picture because there's a look to it. And to me, this had even before I started to edit, it had a look to it. So I just steered into it.
Yeah.
You know, instead of saying, oh, no, I want it to be crisp and clear and have this, you know, look to it. I said, yes, this reminds me of something else. So let me see if I can steer into it and, you know, don't fight the image. I wasn't trying to fight the image.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I think it was a darn fine choice.
No, thanks. Thanks, man.
So my third one, this is Hoarfrost, and hoar is spelled H-O-A-R. This is a phenomenon that happens when you have a foggy, foggy night and it's really, really cold. And I was at work on the night shift. And so I don't get outside when I'm at work because I don't smoke, but anybody that smokes goes outside to have their cigarette. And I heard a few guys say that when they come in, oh, is it ever foggy out? I looked at the temperature and I'm thinking, oh, this could be good. And sure enough, as soon as we walked out, what a wonderful scene. We get out at 7 in the morning. We work 7 to 7, and it was still dark out, but this shrub thing was right under one of the light stands in the parking lot, and it's kind of up on a hill. So I looked like an oddball walking up on this hill through this tall grass in the snow to get to this. And I just took about maybe three shots of it. And for this one here, I used the 3x camera, and I just kind of composed it. You know, I wanted to get it kind of on an angle and then have that piece on the bottom come in and take up some of the negative space, and snap. And there it was. So when I took it, I took it in Pro Raw. And when I brought it up on the screen, the actual twig that's under the frost was lit up quite well. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's the image processing and all that stuff that it's doing. Mm-hmm. So what I did was, in darkroom on the desktop again, I dialed the local tone map right down. I think I might have taken it all the way down to 0. So I'm left with as close to a regular raw file as I could get. And what that did was that left the top part of the ice crystals lit up while the bottom side was basically in shade or in shadow, which is, it really makes it look better. It looked almost too fake the way it was before. So then all I did was, you know, I took the clarity up to try to get a little more detail out of the individual spikes of the frost, and maybe sharpen it just a little bit and increase the whites to make the tips a little brighter. And I think that's about it. The background, that was the sky or whatever. And, you know, that's just how it was. It was just black as black. So mm-hmm. I thought it was a nice contrasting image of white hoarfrost on a black background. Mm. And that's pretty much it.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize there was a name for that type of frost.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes sense. You have to categorize different types of phenomenon, even if it's not common usage per se.
Yeah, and the thing about hoarfrost is, as soon as the sun hits it, it's gone.
Yeah,
it doesn't. It looks much very, for it very to melt.
Fine. It looks so fine, like sugar crystals almost.
Yeah. And these
it almost looks like you could almost dust this.
Yeah. I mean, had I bumped into that, mm-hmm. I don't know if they would fall off or not. I don't know how well they stick to things. I've never tried to bump it before, but I tried to get some hoarfrost after work one time later in the spring, but it was still cold out, really, really cold. And there was still snow on the ground, but the sun was already up. And I drove around real quickly to try to get some, and it was just disappearing so fast. I couldn't believe it.
Mm.
But
I know what, I love the contrast here. The pitch black background with the white. It, like I said, it's just the way it turned out. It's just the way it was. But it looks like you either took the image and cut it out and you put it on the black background.
Yeah.
Or you did something in editing to get rid of the background. And that's just the way it looks.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have to take the shadows down or anything to darken that down. It was just, you know, naturally that dark. I took a few other shots that morning, like after this, like once I left the parking lot, I thought, okay, I'm going to drive around, see what I can get. And with night mode, it brought the landscape out or whatever. There was one that I was so disappointed that it turned out so bad, but it would have been a good shot had it been more clear. It was just trees off in the distance across a field with this frost all over them, and it would have looked really good. But with all the processing that night mode had to do, I couldn't get it in raw, and it just did not turn out very good at all. I don't think I even posted it anywhere. So, but I love getting this kind of frost, and it's not very often I get the opportunity to capture it. So, I was pretty pleased with it.
Mm-hmm. It turned out real good.
Speaking of frost, this one, your third one, looks like it's got some frost in it. Or is that just...
Oh, yeah.
Is that
frost? That's more snow.
Oh, okay.
That's more... I would say that's more snow. When we're talking about limitations again, this was across the river and up the hill.
Oh, okay.
So, the one bridge that goes over the river, here locally, goes over Allegheny River and across the river on top of the hill, you have some homes and some apartment buildings which were built to look over, you know, to get the view of overlooking the river with the hills and everything going on. And the one thing I liked is the snow was it was almost gone, but just underneath here, you could see where it was still in some of the trees and still on some of the ground up top. And so this was pretty zoomed in. I want to say this was 10. This was definitely digital zoom. Yeah, so this was really zoomed in.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that you had the little outcropping of homes that popped out, and you had the frost underneath, and you had the color on the sky really wasn't that blue either. I did do some editing to make the sky a little bluer. It was more still a little grayer, being overcast. Yeah. So I did pop the colors a little bit more. But I just kind of like the contrast between the house and the snow and the sky. And then you can see down below, you get a little more, just more of the brown versus the white.
Yeah. Well, you know, the sky doesn't look unnaturally blue. I mean, it could very easily look that kind of blue with cloud cover. And, you know, it looks like a painting, right? I mean, it looks like an oil painting. Now, is that the result of the zoom, or did you?
I want to. It's more the result of the zoom and me trying to work with it.
Yeah.
So it works. Just because of the zoom. Oh yeah, yeah. But the zoom being that far, it does cause issues. So there's only so much you can do up there. But once you're up there, like I said, in terms of. Literally, like I said earlier about the look with the pictures with Leo and Rosie, you could try to fight it, and sometimes it's worth it, and sometimes you just gotta turn into it. Just like if you're sliding on a snowy road, you turn into this turn. Right. You know.
Yeah.
You don't want to fight it. Just turn into it. In this case, it was, you know, because of the limitation of the zoom and using the digital zoom.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of turned into the painting look.
Yeah, yeah.
I could have done a little bit more. I could have thrown it into an app and made it really look like a watercolor.
Yeah.
I may even try that, you know, and see what it turns out then. Or just maybe too much and just may throw it off too much.
Well, I think had you tried to sharpen it up, it may have ruined it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think taking this the direction that you did, and I mean, it doesn't look like you've done any filter work to make it look like a painting. It's just the way it turned out. I think it worked out well. I mean, it looks kind of cool that way. You know, it's a good thing we talked about the limitations of the iPhone camera before we looked at these, because you're between this one and your last picture. You've made those limitations work for your work to your advantage, and I think those decisions that you made, whether you knew it or not, actually worked out really well. You know, I like this image; it's really cool. I mean,
yeah,
you got a little bit of the rule of thirds happening with the buildings on the top of the hill, but about a third of the way down. And then the rest of the way down, it's all, you know, bushes and trees and stick season galore. But the snow on them just gives it an element of interest that it's kind of captivating. So, you know, well done.
Thanks, Rick.
All right. Well, I think we've got ourselves a show. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's three each. Yep. Okay. I lost count of how many pitches we were looking at. So, all right. Well, I think that was a really good discussion on the limitations of the camera. And, you know, I really like how it kind of bled over into some of our images as well. So, you know, we were able to debunk some stuff and some stuff just, you know, it was like running into a brick wall as far as limitations go. So, yeah. Pretty good topic. I'm glad you thought of it, Dave. And Rosie, she made an appearance, and it was no Leo episode, but
nope.
But I thought it was good. So tell everybody where they can find you.
Sure, you can find me on most social media as ProfPod, on TikTok as ProfProdPGH, and on Facebook as Dave Partner Jr.
Alrighty, you can find me on, well, like I say, the best place to go to about.me/McMillan. But, you know, my name, Greg McMillan, on Facebook in the iPhotography podcast group and the Shane Mostyn mobile photography group. And now in the Explorer of Life group run by Rick Salmon. It's another wonderful group. There's not a whole pile of people in there yet, maybe a couple of hundred or so, but it's going to continue to grow. And, you know, another great place for mobile photography. I think it's just mobile in general. I don't think it's iPhone centric or anything. So give it a look, and don't forget to check out Shane Mostyn's YouTube video about the filters that he put out the other day. Really cool stuff. And he also just released one about shooting the Milky Way with Expert RAW, which is kind of like Samsung's version of Apple's Pro RAW. So it was interesting to see how that turned out too. So I think there's a link to his channel in the show notes if you want to check out what he's doing. And I guess we will call it a night, Dave, and we'll see everybody in the next one.
Sounds good. Have a great one, everyone.